I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Mr. Tom Gerke. What's up, Tom?
Hey, man. Great to be here.
So you don't know Tom's voice, but you do know his work. He does the artwork for the podcast proper. He does the artwork for our Patreon. He does the artwork for our Wall of Weird here on Always On to Smallville. But Tom, how did you become a fan of Smallville? It's actually pretty recently, isn't it?
Yeah, and at a late age. So I don't know what I was doing in the early 2000s when this was on. I guess I just wasn't all that interested in a CW show about Superman. In early 2018, I left my job at 25 years, had a lot of free time on my hands, and I said, well, let me go through and catch up on some TV. So I picked Smallville and started live tweeting, and you found me.
We didn't find you, Tom. You found us.
Spiritually, maybe I found you. But my background prior to Smallville was that I'm not a big Superman fan. I just thought he was too powerful. He was fine, but not a lot of personal interest. I was more a Batman fan, of course.
Of course. All the cool kids are.
I don't know about that, but anyway. So yeah, I started watching this show with my two-year-old. Whenever the theme song would play, my two-year-old would come running into the room. And when the theme song was over, he would go run out of the room. And I would watch the episode. And over the course of a month and a half, 2 months, consumed 10 seasons, and then went back and caught up on the podcast. I tried the podcast while I was watching, but you're a little spoilery for a show that's 18 years old at the time.
I do try to mention the series finale at least once in every episode. That's true.
And I was more inclined to listen to the podcast after having watched all 10 seasons, because I did enjoy the show that much. I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but, this is the Superman character that I like. He doesn't have the easy button. He's just figuring it out.
You and I have talked about this, off microphone on Twitter and whatnot. What separates Smallville from, the majority of the Arrowverse today, if I dare say, is, it has, even, the worst episodes have, a message or something to them, I think, that they're trying to say something. There's more something you can relate to, personally on your level. That's how I feel about it. I have picked up, I think that's how you feel about it as well, compared to, the Smallville of yesterday and the Arrowverse of today, if I'm not misquoting you.
Nope, that's 100%. The fact that it is relatable, one interesting thing, to you it's relatable because you were growing up at the same time, same age as Clark Kent. There are differences between your life and his. I'm guessing. But
a few. One or two. There are one or two, yes.
I'm 47 when I'm watching it the first time. And I'm binging it. It wasn't a week-to-week thing. So my experience watching it is significantly different perspective than yours. But it still works. I still find things that relate to me or relate to things that I remember. It's situational. And Smallville works really well regardless of age or, where you're coming from in life. Maybe it was because it was written by old guys. Maybe that's why I relate to it now, because their vision of what high school life is 20 years in the rearview mirror. But it's one of the few shows that I've watched that I didn't expect to like, but definitely hooked me. It's one of my favorite shows, obviously. Do I wish I'd seen it when it first came out? I don't know. I don't know if I'd have liked it as much.
That's a unique way to watch it, and a lot of people who follow the podcast and have been on the podcast have watched it similarly, just binged it, and that's such a different experience, because I sit here, I remember waiting between Tempest and Vortex, like, oh man, is he gonna fly? I'm like, of course he's not gonna fly, right?
Yeah. And pro tip, don't make a drinking game out of when Lana shows up in the loft if you're gonna binge it, because you won't last.
Especially if you've been in 2 months, like you
Right.
said.
No, it doesn't work.
I get just a question on that then. Binging it like that, like do you see like the phases of the show? Because I've said, like you have seasons 1 through 4, 5 through 7, and then eight
Oh,
through ten.
absolutely.
Yeah.
The transitions are abrupt. When you're watching it that quickly, back to back, there's the high school years, there's the,
College dropout years.
yeah, then there's
Right.
the Metropolis years. It definitely has those phases, but that's fine. The show had to progress. There's reasons. They didn't expect it to last. They didn't have a 10-year plan.
Did you know, like binging it like you did, like did you know when certain characters were gonna show up or leave? Like did you
No.
know that, did it shock you when Lex left after 7 years? Like
Oh, yeah. I did listen to first couple episodes of the podcast. I think I was into the third season by then. And then I realized you weren't going to respect the spoiler code, because it's only 18 years.
The 18.
Anyway.
This show is a legal adult. I'm allowed
Yes.
to spoil it.
But as far as spoilers, I had not sought anything out about Smallville. So I did not know that there is no payoff at the end. I didn't know when characters would roll on, roll off. It was all a surprise. From this side of the airing, the original airing, I'm seeing guest stars, but I recognize them from other things. Whereas maybe from your side, you saw them on Smallville, and then they went on to do other
Before
things.
they were famous people, absolutely.
Right. So, but yeah, there were a lot of surprises. It was fun. I would, if you haven't watched Smallville, and I'm probably speaking to the wrong crowd if you're listening to this podcast,
The third to last
but
episode of season 5 of the Retrospective Podcast. If you haven't watched Smallville, we highly recommend it.
I'm still enjoying the podcast. I still watch episodes. This was my second and a half viewing of Fade. So, it's still relatively new, but it's good.
Well, you mentioned Fade, and that is the episode we're talking about this week. And Tom, what is your recollection of Fade? Because I got to tell you, this is another one of those episodes where it had faded from my memory, if you know what I mean.
It's well named. Through my Twitter live tweets, when I first watched the series, and it was pretty thin for this episode, so didn't make a lot of impact. Even the synopsis that I read, once I actually started watching it again, it came back, but.
Well, in Smallville, the official companion season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, the co-writer episode Turi Meyer had this to say, quote, "The germ of the concept was, what if Clark saves Hitler? What if Clark saves somebody that is obviously a bad guy? It's the same dilemma a policeman or a fireman or a doctor goes through. You can't make that moral decision to not save someone based on who they are. It touched on the Superman mythology really well, we thought." And Meyer goes on to say, when Clark saved Lex in season one, Lex was going to grow into a bad guy. But at the time, he wasn't that bad a guy. He was just a regular guy. As the episode developed, we realized, oh wow, there is a lot of parallel, a microcosm of what will eventually happen between Clark and Lex. That's very true. That is a parallel from an earlier episode of Smallville. Also, another parallel from an earlier episode of Smallville is an invisible guy. This is the second time they've done this.
Yeah.
There's a specific point where they could have brought up that happened before, but they blatantly do not. So I'll bring that up. It's like, oh, it's okay if you don't mention things that happened in the past, but then you literally like call up a database of the past and say, nope, never seen this before. It's like, come on, guys. So, an invisible guy. They don't even bother to give us any kind of explanation for this guy, do they?
Just meteor rocks.
He was in town.
He's in the area.
Like, at least the last guy, Jeff from Shimmer, the little brother of the housekeeping family that lived at Luther Mansion for that one episode, at least he went to the trouble of rubbing some kind of invisibility lotion all over his body.
Well, normally they try to, at least in the past, link the power to some aspect of the character, you know, even if it doesn't make scientific sense, at least it makes literary sense.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about season one, like the two salesmen. Like, oh, you guys are
right,
salesmen,
right.
So you can convince people of stuff.
Exactly. Okay. They didn't even bother.
Well, James Marshall, one of the series directors, he says in the companion quote, doing an invisible guy is always a difficult project. You can't see the guy, and we always have to work within a budget. So every time you want to show the person and have a visual effect, you rely on technique, points of view, and taking the guy's point of view. It's interesting, but you have to make sure that when the audience is watching it, they understand what's going on. You don't have anybody to actually film when you've got an invisible guy, right? It all comes down to how you shoot it, what your angles are, and making sure that the audience understands that it's the invisible guy's point of view, so you're with the invisible guy. Which, yes, we have invisible vision in this episode.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that, Tom?
It was fine. It was the Predator.
Yes, I thought that too.
I didn't know that it was necessary, but it was fine.
Well, speaking of Invisible Men and stuff, have you seen the new Invisible Man movie as of this recording? New, the 2020?
I have not, no.
It's actually the last movie I saw in theaters before the world shut down because of COVID-19. I actually saw it at a drive-in theater, which is really cool. I give it 5 stars. I really enjoyed it. I think Blumhouse is like the best studio out there these days because they take high concept stuff, have low budget, and do some great original stuff with it. So I highly recommend the new Invisible Man movie. Elizabeth Moss is the star. And there are a couple scenes in there that actually really remind me of this episode. Of course, this episode really does hit on a lot of the Invisible Man like tropes, like, oh, somebody's in a shower. Right? That's like a necessary scene. And final note, our Invisible Man in this episode, he was actually on an episode of Birds of Prey. Reunion. So there were some Smallville Birds of Prey crossover there, if anyone cared to know. He played the character of Stuart Thompson in Birds of Prey. And he has one of those looks, right? Of like, I don't know, like it's just a smarmy business slash college guy.
He's very suspicious looking. You didn't have to wonder who in the crowd of people who was the bad guy.
Right. Right. If he just had worn something else and not his black trench coat everywhere he went, perhaps he wouldn't be so easily identified. But you know, I looked it up and I was like, well, has this guy become like a staple actor on these CW shows, right? But actually, no. I mean, he's been in Young and the Restless, but really not much else beyond you know, Smallville, Veronica Mars, Jag back in the day, Birds of Prey, like I mentioned. So just a guest star on a few TV shows back then, but. But he never carved out that role of shady-looking dude that he had captured so well in this episode. But let's get into it then. Fade.
Clark, if your meteor challenge friend tried to kill Lex to repay a favor, it's probably not the first time he's murdered someone. In fact, with his powers, he might even be the Chameleon.
Who's the Chameleon?
Hitman for hire, number 8 on the FBI's top 40 and climbing the charts. He also happens to be the prime suspect for the courthouse murder.
Which happened right after I saved Graham's life.
His trademark is getting to his victims in highly secure locations. He leaves no prints, no images on surveillance cameras, and no clues.
Meteor power would explain a lot. He said he'd been in Smallville before.
Well, unfortunately, there is no record of camouflage power on the digital wall of Weird, and the name Graham Garrett didn't get any hits. This guy's totally off the grid.
If I hadn't pulled him out of traffic, that witness would still be alive, and Lex wouldn't be in the hospital. I gotta stop him.
Well, it's easier said than done. I mean, when you're a wanted man, invisibility really comes in handy.
Fade is the 20th episode of Smallville's fifth season and aired on April 27, 2006. It was written by Turi Meyer and L. Septime and directed by Terrence O'Hara. One day I need to know how to pronounce L. Septime's name. It's like L. Septian, L. Septine, L. Septian. I don't know. I said Al Goff's name wrong on this podcast for many an episode. I called him Al Gow. Alfred Gow.
So what you pronounced my name right, and everybody has a problem with it, so I give you points.
Thank you. Well, there we go. But this episode starts out with a big press conference, a police escort in front of a courthouse. They're on location in Smallville, so don't get used to it, guys, because starting in a couple of years, you're never going to go out again. You're going to be in the back lot every time. But I think they went to Vancouver to film this because it looks like an early-year Smallville metropolis. There's this guy that's coming out of a car, and it's being protected by police. So something's going down here. And we see Clark and Chloe going up to the courthouse, and we have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark is in his blue shirt and red jacket. And Clark describes himself as playing Your Boy Friday to Chloe, which is a reference to His Girl Friday, a classic. Who stars in that? Is it Cary Grant, right? Or sure.
Sure. I mean, I'm older than you, but I'm not that older.
She wants to get him out of the barn and gives him a press pass. You know, it says Clark Kent on it. This is a very important plot element there, that he's wearing a press pass with his name on it. But, of course, at first she's like, oh, I want to get you out of the barn. I want you to get your journalism fired back up. And he says his days of journalism are done. But, hey, we're at the end of season five here, so I'm glad they're at least addressing that Clark needs to get back into journalism. But as is prone to do on the streets of Metropolis, there's a near car accident that Clark has to jump into action on, isn't there, Tom?
Yeah, and I thought it was a little ironic that Graham almost gets killed because the driver didn't see him in time.
Yes.
You'd think he'd be, I mean, I know it's spoiling what's going to happen later in the episode, but you know, for a guy that walks around invisible all the time, the fact that he's not a little bit more aware of his environment, you would think he would be on the lookout for anything that might, I don't know.
Right.
Because, I just thought it was funny.
He's focused in on the guy. His target, right? And that's why he has no awareness of what's around him. But no, that's a great point, because like as someone who walks around invisible, you need to be looking about, because cars aren't going to see you. You know,
exactly.
People aren't going to see you, so you need to have a little more self-awareness there. But I chalk that up to some irony, so I'm down with it. I'm going to let that pass. It's a really good stunt, actually. You know, I mean, Clark, he leaps a tall taxi in a single bound over the street to save him. It's very classic Clark Kent and or Superman on the streets of Metropolis saving someone from a car accident. I think it was a really good save to start out the episode. A lot of scope, too, because we're not on a back lot. We're on the streets of Vancouver downtown. There's a lot of traffic, a lot of extras, a lot of cars, a lot of vehicles. So Grant does notice Grant. That's not his name, is it?
No.
Grant. You know, I want to keep calling him Grant Gabriel, because that's, spoilers, a character from season 7. But...
what's funny, it's Graham, mm-hmm. But I had to actually write that in my notes, because even after viewing, writing down my notes, I couldn't remember his name at the end of the episode. So I was like, I need to write this. Everything just fades.
Mm-hmm. There it is. So Graham, he notices Clark's press pass and what his name is, right? Because we see the insert shot of we'll take a screenshot of that for y'all who want to see it. The press pass that Clark's wearing. He wants to thank Clark. Clark's like, nope, we're good. all in a day's work, goes about his business, you know, goes back with Chloe, and Chloe's like, oh, you couldn't have done that on the farm. And it's a feel-good moment for Clark and Chloe. And then we carry on, though, and they put this guy who's clearly in some kind of witness protection program in a room, and they're like, don't worry, there's only one way in and out of this room. So it's like, oh, thank you.
That sealed his fate right there.
Yeah. Now we know what's going to happen. And again, this is very similar to the current or modern, most recent, whatever you want to call it, Invisible Man movie, where they're like in an interrogation room. And this is where we start getting our invisible vision. Like you said, it's like the Predator. I mean, they just put some kind of editing filter on it. I was like, oh, look at us. We're usually I would feel that would be kind of a cheap move. But I get what they were saying in the companion, like they needed to get some information across. Like, how else would you have known how he knows certain things moving forward in the episode if they don't give you that POV of him? But I would have preferred not to see that. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, it was fine. It was a little jarring. At the end of the scene, you've got the invisible vision, and then he's backing out of the room, I guess. And then they do this cut back to the regular lens. You know, they clean the Vaseline all off the lens or whatever. And so now you know you're supposed to be looking through the eyes of the cop showing up or whatever. I thought it was a little janky, but it didn't bother me too much.
Yeah, it was a little, the transition back to normal vision was a little strange because, and also, you know, we see him kill the guy. And then he backs into the crowd and then becomes uninvisible. It's like, what? That's a bad... Why are you putting yourself at the scene of the crime, bro?
Well, yeah, on top of that. So I get they didn't see him when he was invisible in the room. But there's clearly plenty of people out in the hallway. You know, did nobody notice?
Just saw a guy up here.
This guy just pop up out of thin air. Yeah.
Exactly. So that starts off the episode with a murder, as any good episode of Smallville does. And then we get to Somebody Save Me, and we come back. And we're at the Kent farm, and Lois is in full early Lois form here, playing video games. They die, die, die. I'm like, why? I don't know why they portray Lois as so immature in these episodes. What is your take on this, Tom? I'm seeing your nods here. Seems like you're in agreement with me. What do you think?
Absolutely. I like Lois, but the way they use her, particularly in these earlier seasons, is just weird. It's not the Lois Lane that she becomes in the mythos. You know, ace reporter Lois Lane. She's got the forceful personality, but not a lot of common sense.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it unfair to criticize Lois for not being Lois yet when we have Clark, who's not Superman yet, right? But my response to that is Clark is still like recognizable as Superman in a lot of areas. And Lois is not at this point. Because I mean, I'll just go, obviously, if you guys listen to this podcast, it's like, how do you do a young Lois Lane? Well, Chloe is the young Lois Lane. That's who I envision the young Lois Lane is. And so when you have the A-B comparison in your face every week, it's like, well, shouldn't Lois be more like Chloe at this point? Right. So I think that's where a lot of my criticisms come from on that front.
And I agree. I think all criticisms are fair to a certain extent. I don't have a problem deviating from what the expectation is. If they want to write Lois Lane as a, you know, goofy eye candy, jack of all trades, can run campaigns, can be a senator's personal assistant, that's fine. I don't have this, well, that's not how she was in the comics, as long as you're consistent with it. I'm just glad she kind of grows out of it towards the end of the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love Lois in Smallville starting in season 8, which I always make sure that I say to get that on the record, okay? Because then they let her be Lois. But you know, when we start out with her playing video games and acting silly, I said, oh, another one of these episodes with Lois, and it continues throughout the
episode. Well, when Chloe becomes Oracle, then
yes,
there's room for Lois to be Lois.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's the, you know, there's giant gifts, that giant TV, video games, and that thing and that stuff. Martha and Clark are like, where'd this come from? Lois says, oh, well, the delivery guys are dropping off. There's a thank you note somewhere. It's like, thanks, Clark. And it's not signed, right? It's just had Graham just signed this, it would have solved a lot of problems.
The episode would have been a lot shorter, though.
That's right, indeed. It did remind me of Red when Clark comes home, like with a giant big screen video game, and he's sitting there and playing video games, and Clark and Jonathan and Martha find him in the bar, and that's what the scene reminded me of. But Clark thinks that Lionel might have done it because, oh, well, maybe he's trying to win me over. So Martha's going to give him a call, but she doesn't think it was him. So then he goes to the Daily Planet to ask Chloe to dig into who did it. Meanwhile, we get a little more exposition. Chloe tells Clark that the star witness in that trial they were going to go to that got postponed, he was killed in a locked room, so it's a mystery now. Clark tells Chloe about all these gifts, and Chloe's like, when's movie night? I liked her reaction to this, right? She was all about these gifts he got.
Well, sure, why not? So, of course, Clark wants Chloe to use her special skills, hidden connections, whatever, to go find out who bought the plasma at Metro Plasma, which must have been a low imagination day in the writing room that day. But it took 8 seconds from the point that Clark asked Chloe to find out information on who bought the TV for her to, you know, find the site, hack into the site, pull it up, and start spilling that, oh, no, this was cash-only transaction. There is no paper trail.
Well, she's well on her way to becoming Oracle, as we establish.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take a screenshot of this, but you're right. It's like, boom, 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 boom. Oh, no answers here. But Chloe suggests that if it wasn't Lionel, because Clark said, Martha, call Lionel. Lionel said, when him. Maybe it's Luther Jr., referring to Lex. And she says, maybe he feels guilty. And Clark's like, guilty about what? And Chloe's like, uh-oh, because of Lex and Lana, which I guess they're a thing. Now, I feel like I'm watching every episode, right? Clearly, because of this podcast. But I feel like we skipped a couple of episodes of them being in a relationship, right? Tom, did you get that vibe as well?
Yeah, for lack of a better term, they were heading that way, but it was never consummated. Maybe a better term could be used there.
Yeah. So did you tell him about us? Us? What do you mean us? Well, we'll get into that more later as we get more scenes with him. But yeah, that is established that Chloe obviously knows what's going on. I mean, yeah, she knew there was chemistry, but she didn't know that like it became a thing, right? But apparently she did off-screenville, as we say, that became a thing. Now, I did like the attention to detail here in continuity-wise, since Clark, he's thinking about if Lex gave this to him, and he said, he did tell me he wanted us to find some common ground. I'm going to go visit him and see if it was him. And that's exactly what Lex says to Clark in the last episode. So I appreciate the continuity, the little nuggets that reward you for watching every episode.
Yep, I love that.
So then we have Lois doing some yoga at the at the kid farm, you know, just on her cell phone headset.
Talking to a center. I you know, doing sit-ups in your workout clothes, sweaty, making political deals for her boss. She made herself completely at home.
Yeah. Well, I always forget. I'm like, is she living there? No, she's living at the Talon. But she really is acting like she's still living there. I mean, hey, look, she looks great in the workout clothes. That's why she's in them. That's why they're putting her in them right now. But we get some creepy Invisible Man cam because he's watching her workout. We see that Graham is already there watching her exercise, which is like, oh, okay, Invisible Man is a perv. Got it. He's a peeping Tom.
Well, you know, if they always ask people, what superpower do you want? And invisibility is right up there. I'm sure if people had the power to be invisible, their per factor to go up. I'm not saying I would do that.
Now, Graham does eventually make himself known, and you know, it startles her. She's like, oh yeah, where'd you come from? He says, hey, I'm looking for Clark. Are you his girlfriend? Which is a subtle way of finding out if this girl is single or not. So I do applaud that. And of course she says, not in this life. Because it's funny, you see, because Clark and Lois are gonna end up together. So it's comedy whenever they say that they're not. It's very funny. I don't know if you guys picked up on that. But we're going to get a lot of that this episode. So stay tuned.
Yep.
You know, he wants to thank him for everything. He's like, where's the plasma? And she's like, well, he sent it all back. And he's like, well, that's kind of weird. And she's like, well, that's Clark. So that's true. I like that even she knows that that's how he is. but he wants to hang around and wait for Clark to show up. And apparently, during this time, because Lois says, oh, yeah, well, he usually isn't gone for too long, so just hang around. And apparently, this is when he woos Lois and asks her out to this party later, because we don't see anything between now and then.
Again, Ace reporter Lois Lane, you would think, would have a better feel, instinct for people. I guess it's normal for people to show up in the Kent house unannounced, just walk right in. That's what Lois does, so I guess maybe it's normal.
So then we cut from here to Lex coming home after a day at the office, or what we find out to be is a business trip to Washington, D.C. He was apparently there to investigate Milton Fine. Lana is there waiting for him. It's a sweet moment where she's just waiting for him to come home. And again, I feel like we went from like uncertainty of the relationship, or their, you know, not even a relationship, but uncertainty of what was going on between them. We had a kiss at the end of Fragile, and then we had one scene where they were both like, I don't know, in Mercy, and now we're like, seems like they've been dating for a month, right? They're in the honeymoon phase, right? So I feel like I missed a couple episodes here, Tom.
Yeah, but it was a sweet moment.
It was sweet. I'm like, I shouldn't like this. I kind of like it, though, because it's like normal people, right? I'm like, wow, this is refreshing on some level, because, you know, Lex is a normal guy and Lana is a normal girl. But as we find out, though, everything Lex tells Lana here about what he found in Washington, D.C., complete lie. Because he's like, oh, yeah, what, Milton Fine, I don't know, a bunch of red tape, no information, we know nothing about him. Well, we find out that he's actually talking to Fine via cell phone and email, because apparently James Marsters was too expensive to keep as a presence throughout the season, so he'll show up in the last couple episodes here, but but he's only available by email and phone call at this point. Lex tells Lana, I've only been gone for a week, but I feel homesick. And she's like, why would you miss Smallville? He's like, cows. Now, I do remember this part. I distinctly remember this scene. He's like, cows, cornfields. And then she's like, oh, I missed you too. And it, you know, out of context, it's a very sweet moment. You're absolutely right. I don't disagree.
It's cute. And I know there's the whole creepiness factor with Lex being older and her being just out of high school. The age of consent in Kansas is 16. There's obviously nothing going on until she's of age. Not like with Coach, what's his name?
Yes.
But, you know, I'm 7 years older than my wife, so I can't throw any stones. Of course, she was well out of high school before we got together. So.
Well, and I think that's where that creepiness factor comes from. It's like we've seen these characters for 5 years together. Where we saw him know her for through high school, plus he's his best friend's girlfriend, and they're all younger. Anyway, there's a lot of factors going on, but hey, in a vacuum, this is very sweet.
Yeah, one thing that bothers me about the Lexana relationship is in the earlier seasons, he seemed like the big brother. He did a lot for Lana, and it all seemed platonic. Out of the goodness of heart.
Innocent,
yeah. And now it's sort of colored by this, oh, maybe secretly all along he's been plotting to steal Clark's love of Clark's life.
Yeah, it does recontextualize some things in the past, but...
Yeah, but it's all right.
It's all right. So then we have a very passionate kiss. This is the first one that's not awkward. It's not in a dream, right? Nobody's under the influence or anything. It's a Lex and Lana kiss, and I applaud the show for their visual continuity of this. Whenever they have Lex and Lana have like a kiss or a moment, and Clark comes in, it's always like shot very similarly. You have Lex and Lana kind of in the foreground, and then like there's like a reveal like behind something of Clark standing far away, like seeing it, like even back in Covenant where Clark goes to the train station before Lana's gonna, or I guess that's the airport because she's going to Paris, but train station.
Right.
But he's sitting across the street. We see them hugging. He looks far away. Earlier episodes this season, like in Splinter, where he's on the Silver Kryptonite, he imagines them kissing. He's kind of far away. Also in Lockdown, when he goes to the hospital and he sees them together, he's like in the doorway. And so it reminds you very much of the same. I don't know if that's intentional or just the way they shoot these things, but it reminded me of all the moments we've seen that before. And yeah, hopefully no one's ever been in Clark's situation. That's the kind of thing you don't wish on your worst enemy, you know, like walking in on the love of your life.
I'm obviously not as nice as you are, but
it's exactly the kind of thing you
exactly
wish on your worst enemy. But no, I mean, put yourself in Clark's shoes. Oh my God.
Riddle me this. When Lex shows up and Lana's in there, she explicitly states that Lex has upped security on the mansion, which a padlock on the front door would be upping security. Everybody just walks in and out. Mm-hmm. But then Clark just walks in. does he have a pass? He was friends with Lex. I would think at one point, sure, he could come and go as he pleased, but that ship has sailed.
No, thank you for bringing that up, because I've made note of that, too. Like, she specifically tells him that his security got increased, and maybe that was to make a point about how the invisible guy gets in. I can only assume that's the only reason it's in here. But then you immediately contradict that by Clark just appearing. Right? Did he super speed through? Like, I always, exactly. It makes you think about stuff you shouldn't think about. Had she not said that, you wouldn't have questioned it. You'd be like, this is how it is at Luther Mansion. Everybody comes and goes. Maybe he super sped in. I don't know how he usually comes in and out. Does he check in at it with some security guard? Does he not? I don't know. But yeah, to have her say that and then have Clark just be there, especially where Clark and Lex are in the relationship, where he's probably not on the all-access pass to Luther Mansion anymore. It does stick in your head there. But hey, this is a put yourself in Clark's shoes here. This is like it's the worst thing you want to see, right? And so like we stay on his like stunned face for a while, and then you see him. He kind of like walks in the hallway, and he's like, oh my God! Like you can put yourself in his shoes, and it's like that's the worst. So
that sucks. Yeah.
So then he immediately goes to the Daily Planet and confronts Chloe about it. Chloe is like, hey, Clark, riddle me this. How does someone die in his locker room? He's like, you knew about this. Like, he completely disregards her jovial, let's solve this mystery. And he's like, you knew about this. And Chloe's like, well, Lana is my friend, and she asked me not to tell you and keep it a secret, and I thought you'd appreciate that. So Chloe's in a tough spot here. But again, I feel like, when did that conversation take place? Like, I guess they're referencing Fragile when they had that conversation. But I don't know. There should have been one episode here, in my opinion, with Lex and Lana in a relationship, and there's a couple of conversations with Chloe, and it's established that they're in a relationship, and then this happens instead of like where we are now. So I keep coming back to that, but I just think everyone's acting like this has been a thing that's going on for a while, and it's not. It's relatively new.
And it is a little jarring. So when I first watched Smallville 2 years ago, I binged all 10 seasons over the course of a month and a half or 2 months or whatever. It was back to back to back. And you would think there'd be a greater sense of continuity, but we hit this episode. And now I'm looking back on my first watch. Did I say, did I accidentally skip some? I don't know. It was jarring.
Well, she basically has to tell Clark, hey, you don't have any say over who she dates anymore. So you're just going to have to... just gonna have to deal with it, which is that's the brutal reality of the situation. Maybe you shouldn't have forced her away, Clark. I know, and again, I always come back to this now. I always thought it was dumb, right? That, like, Clark, come on, just tell Lana. But you gotta remember, he did it, and then the same day she died. So I'm like, all right, I can see why he might not want to do it. I know that's dumb, right? Sitting hindsight is 20/20, but hey, that's where I'm going with it. That's why I think he feels so strongly about this. But moving forward, he goes home, as he does, and he's moping in the loft. He has a picture of Lana he's staring at, which he just kind of drops, and it breaks. And it's the perfect time for Graham to come wander on up. It's funny, the dynamic here, and I know they were talking about how this is like Lex and Clark. It is very like season one, like Lex and Clark. Did you pick up on that too, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They even dress the same.
Yeah, the trench coat and everything. This guy, Graham is Lex with hair. That's all he is.
Yep.
He asks, Graham asked him about the gifts, and he's like, what's the deal? You don't watch TV? Which I thought that was pretty funny. And Clark's just telling him, look, none of that's necessary. Thank you very much. I'm good. And Graham's like, you're hanging out alone in a barn in the middle of nowhere. I don't think that's good. So there is some nice interplay here between the two of them.
One thing I didn't understand here is Clark asked him how he found him. And it goes back to the press pass. So now you see the payoff for the press pass. But then he says, okay, the name was on there, and he's familiar with the area. Well, what area? They were in Metropolis. Is it the 3-hour radius? The 6-hour radius? You know, is he familiar with Kansas in general?
Familiar with the state of Kansas, yeah. Well, yeah. that was a little seed they planted, right? Because Clark's like, oh, you're from Smallville? He's like, no, I drove through Smallville last year on business. Last year? What happened last year? The second meteor shower. So, and I like how they're just calling it the meteor shower now. They've given up calling it the second meteor shower. They call it the meteor shower later in the episode. But that plants a little seed that he's a meteor freak. So Graham convinces him, hey, let me take you into town, show you a good time, buy you dinner. And Clark eventually agrees. We cut to this party in Metropolis at Graham's, you know, expensive loft apartment, I assume, with lots of people and looks real fancy. And Graham's like, oh, hey, man, well, I'm glad you made it. Let me introduce you to my date. And it's Lois. Of course, Lois.
Surprise.
Surprise. I did like how Clark tries to talk to her for a second about it, but she's like, no, we're not talking about this anymore. She just walks off. I that was nice to see her just like, we're not even going to have one of these conversations. She does mention throughout the episode, why are you so obsessed with my love life and all this stuff, right? It's like, well, no, it's because she keeps, you know, getting involved with very questionable characters. So. But Graham does send Clark out to the balcony, all right? And Clark does, I like his line here, I'm not crazy about heights, so I'm glad they keep reinforcing that. That's why he can't fly, ever. he goes out to the balcony. And it's so obviously a setup here, right? This woman comes up to him, and she comes on to him pretty strong and kisses him. And Clark is, you know, he's rolling with it pretty well off the top, right? He's like smiling. He's like, you don't even know me. And, you know, but he's obviously having a good time until she says, Graham said you might be nervous or shy. And he's like, wait, Graham sent you out here. Well, hold on. Like, bro, what do you think this was?
Yeah, it was some good acting there from Mr. Welling. He went from that goofy, you know, oh, she's pretty and she's into me, and the slow realization that this was an arranged encounter. I just like how his demeanor changes through that. I thought he did a great job on that.
Absolutely. So he changes his tune and goes inside, and Graham's like, hey, what's wrong, man? Not over your ex-girlfriend? You know, and so they end up talking about his ex. Well, let's get you guys back together. And he's like, well, the problem is she's with another guy. He's like, well, a little more complicated. We can do it. And it comes out that the ex's new boyfriend is Clark's ex-friend. And Graham's like, oh, man, that's just wrong. it's just breaking a code or something. So,
the bro code.
Bro code, man. Comes out that it's Lex Luthor. So now Graham knows Lex Luthor's the guy. So you know what he's going to do. And I don't know, like, what's your take on this guy? Like he was very insistent. He doesn't want to, like, owe anyone anything. That's why he's so strongly trying to give Clark, like, gifts and favors and cheer him up. But it's like, come on, man, just let it go. This farm boy doesn't want your gifts. You don't owe him anything. Just move on with your life. He doesn't know Clark is special at all here, right? He's not trying to get favor with him to get him to do something. Maybe that would have been a better angle, right? Like, he saw him use powers while he saved him. That's why he's interested in him. But, again, that's kind of, you know, we're already ripping off Shimmer. Do we want to rip off Rogue as well? Right. So I don't know. Right? I think he's a little too insistent about helping this goofy kid out, right?
Yeah, he goes overboard for sure. Again, it's a much shorter episode if he gives up after the plasma or after the party, you know.
That just shows you how far Clark has come from the pilot. You know, Lex gave him a truck. He wanted to keep it. Jonathan said no. Graham gives him a home entertainment system. And Clark sends it back. So, maturity, everyone. So, somewhere in this scene, I'm not sure where it would have been, but somewhere in these next few scenes, there is one deleted scene in this episode, and it's Lois getting ready for her next date with Graham, and she's in her talent apartment, and she's got all these clothes laid out, and Martha comes in, and they start talking, and it's not a Bechdel test passing conversation, because they're talking about her love life, but it is nice to see these two characters interact, because even though she, like, works for Martha now, they really don't interact in a lot of meaningful ways here, but Martha and her are talking, and Lois mentions that, you know, Graham threw this big party for Clark last night, and he was only there for 5 minutes, and Martha's like, well, you know, Clark's having, he's going through a lot right now, and he's trying to turn the page on Lana, and that kind of thing. So again, they're talking about turning the page on Lana while talking to Lois. Also, you know, Martha gives her a little fashion advice, and Lois says, oh, if I had a mom around, maybe I wouldn't need help, you know, dressing myself. And Martha says, quote, if I had a daughter, I want her to be just like you. It's like, ugh, we get it. She's going to be her daughter-in-law. Like, they cut that, but the episode is still loaded with this. Clark and Lois are going to be together in the future. Isn't it funny? You know, I just, that doesn't connect with me. Like, I'm sick. If you guys haven't noticed, that stuff annoys me. Because why can't Lois just exist, like, in the show without every episode that she's in having, like, four or five, hey, guys, isn't it funny? They're not dating. They don't like each other, but we know they're soulmates, like, every single time. I don't know. Maybe I harp too much on that, but there it is.
No, it doesn't bother me at all.
Fair enough.
But I'm happy it's there because I enjoy your ranting about it. So it was a delayed payoff for me.
There it is, finally paying off. But hey, we're having fun talking about it. So.
Sure, yeah.
So somewhere in these next few scenes, that scene would have taken place. And, you know, like I said, I would have preferred to leave it in with just to have more of Martha. We never get enough Martha, I think. I know Martha needs more screen time, needs more scenes, so it's unfortunate to lose that scene with her. I don't know what she would have taken out, honestly, though, because nothing immediately comes to mind that she'd have taken out.
Well, and you do get another scene later that's the equivalent.
Oh, exactly, yeah, with Martha and Lois in the dining room table there at the end of the episode.
So, right.
So, yeah, so then, you know, you have that one at least, although that one kind of bookended this one, but it still makes plenty of sense without this one, so... This one had to go for time, unfortunately. This was a Netflix show. The time wouldn't matter. They leave all these deleted scenes in, right? So now we cut to Lex, and he's talking to Fine on the phone. He's like, the formula's ready, Fine, and the vaccine and all this stuff. You're like, oh, okay, so he was just lying to Lana about not knowing anything about Fine. That's interesting. So even though Lex is, he claims to be honest with Lana, he's really not, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone.
He's mostly honest.
Though. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, come on. As honest as anyone really is in real life.
Sure. I mean, he's shared the spaceship stuff. And
he's been way more honest with her than Clark ever has. So
exactly.
So we get some Invisible Man vision. Get some Predator vision in the hallway. And it's funny how people, like, they seem to think, they, like, feel something. Maybe they, like, hear a footstep, or I don't know, when you feel like you're being watched. Like, that's what these people feel like when they're seeing the, when we're seeing them through the Invisible Man vision. Graham just breaks out this rope. I guess that's how I thought he was just strangling people with his bare hands, but tries to kill him with a rope. And he's strangling him pretty good. And the only reason he stops is that Lana comes in the Luther library there and sees all this, and then Graham hits the road. I don't know, if you were Graham, would you have finished the job, or?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, the jig is up. You know, you might as well finish the job, then go find Lana, finish that job, kill whoever saw you doing that.
Why go uninvisible at all here?
Maybe it's like Star Trek. You got to uncloak before you fire your
phasers. All right, winning me over with the Star Trek reference. Tom, well played.
He decloaked when he killed the first guy, right?
He did. So, yes, they can only fire.
So at least they're consistent. And at least Lex is a little bit more resilient than the first guy.
Yeah.
First guy lasted like a second and a half. Lex lasted like 10 seconds, long enough for Lana to show up.
Well, these Luthers are made of expensive and very tough material. So that's true. So we have a hospital visit plus one. Lex is in the hospital. Clark goes in to see him, and he sees that Lana is there holding his hand. Again, we get that, like, through the glass, far away shot of Clark and Lex and Lana together. She kind of sees Clark there, and she kind of slowly removes her hand and kind of goes out to talk to him. She mentions that his trachea was almost crushed. So let me tell you, you go for the trachea. I can tell you from personal experience, if you're in a fight, go for the trachea, because if they can't breathe, they can't fight. So file that away. Life lessons from Always Hold On to Smallville. But Clark asks where Lionel is. And like, oh, he's in Singapore. John Glover is only 13 episodes, so we can't bring him on. He had a big week last week, giving John Glover the week off. That's why he's in Singapore. But Clark, you know, he obviously he knows that they're together, but he's trying to see what she'll say. So he's like, "Oh, he's lucky to have a friend like you to stay with him." And she's like, "Yeah, I figured somebody should be here when he wakes up." And he's asked, well, he asked for more information. She's like, "Yeah, I told the police everything I saw." He's like, "Oh, you were there?" And she's like, "Oh, I was returning some books." So again, lies over lies over lies again for all these characters.
Oh, Lana.
So
she's become the thing she hates.
Yes, you've become the very thing you swore to destroy. So, but she does give Clark a description of the assailant, right? She's like, "Oh, tall guy, dark hair, wore a black trench coat." It's like, bro, Graham, I know you're invisible, but like, wear a ski mask or something, man, right?
He looked like Lex with hair.
Yeah, exactly. I thought she would say, "Well, I actually look a lot like you, Clark," because she's describing this tall guy, dark hair, about 6 feet. But anyway, but honestly, Thomas, the trench coat, which is what, when she says that, Clark's like, "Oh, it must be. I haven't seen Graham not in a trench coat. It must be him." Graham goes to talk to Lois at the Talon. And maybe the scene with Martha was after this one. I don't know, guys. sometimes I just talk about the deleted scene at the beginning, so it's out of the way. So anyway, just plug it in wherever you think it might be. But Graham's talking to Lois here, trying to get her on another date to go see Coldplay. She's like, "Oh, are they in Metropolis?" She's like, "No, Chicago." Which is, you know, he's going to fly her around. And she does say, "You know, you don't need to play the whole, like, rich and famous card." And I like what he says. "It's not a card. It's a reality." So this guy, he has some very douchey one-liners, which I find very amusing, this guy.
I thought she should have followed that up by telling him that her standards were low. You don't need to be a jet setter. I just show up creepily in somebody else's house, and we're good.
It's just really accelerated, and I get this is episodic TV. Right, but it's just like boom, 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 Lois. Like, are you really just gonna go out with these guys? Like, in I don't 2 days, the span of this episode, right? They act like it was some big relationship she was in at the end. It's like you went to some party and then that's it. Like, she really had one date with this guy and then hang out with him at your house when you were working out. That's the extent of your relationship at this point. So maybe if they introduce like a recurring guest star next season for Lois to date, maybe that would be better. We'll see.
That'd never work.
I actually really like Lois and Oliver together, like in the Smallville universe. So just saying, I think they're a good fit.
Yeah.
So
I completely agree. Lois and most members of the Justice League.
Yeah. Aquaman, Green Arrow, Batman, all these iterations. You all seen it all on screen. Yes, my Lois relationship snark will go down quite a bit in the first half of season 6. Don't worry, everyone. So moving on. Because I like that relationship she's in next. So moving on, Clark starts snooping around Grant's place. And Grant's like, "Party's over, man." That was kind of funny. I like it. I don't know. He has some funny lines in here, Grant.
I liked Grant. I mean,
Grant.
As much as you can like a Grant. Douchey hitman. Oh, now you got me calling him Grant. Graham. Anyway, you know, he was a... He had character. It wasn't just a two-dimensional meteor freak of the week. I mean, he was, but...
Yeah, and there was a shade of personality there. Like, he's two and a half dimensional, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I like how, you know, Clark just always just shows up in somebody else's home to berate them. And that's... apparently completely normal. Lex says, "Oh, hey, Clark," and Graham is like, "Yeah, sure, you're in my apartment, you know, no problem."
He's like, "You tried to kill Lex," and I like how Grant uses the same logic on Clark as Lex did back in Metamorphosis, you know, when they're talking about Whitney. He's like, "Hey, you had to pull Whitney out of the truck, your problems will be solved," and Grant's like, "Hey, Lex out of the way, you know, Lana's free agent again." And so that's the same logic, because this guy is season one Lex with hair. That's what he is, right? But a little more nefarious. I don't think Lex was not a murdering type back in season
not
one.
Yet.
So they found out each other's secrets here, because Grant picks up some sculpture. He's going to hit Clark with it, right? And then it shatters. And he's like, oh, I guess I'm not the only one with the secret. And then he disappears right in front of her eyes. So Clark knows he's invisible now.
Not to be that guy, the physics nerd guy. Graham would have to have super strength in order to break a metal sculpture over Clark. But, I get it. He had to find out somehow.
And last week, Martha and Lionel would have been killed when Clark caught the elevator. Right. So.
Exactly.
But now that their secrets have been exchanged, Clark goes to the Daily Planet to talk to Chloe, and she's like, oh, he might be the Chameleon. A hitman for this crime out there. It's on the FBI's most wanted list. And this guy actually has a name. Like that would actually, you know what, Tom? That would have been a better episode for this, better title for this episode, Chameleon, right?
Yeah. I was thinking Thirsty, but Chameleon works.
Well, first of all, they say it in the episode. No one ever says Fade, by the way, for those looking for that tally. I didn't hear anyone say Fade. And it's Fade. Come on, Fade is so lazy. It's like you have the guy is literally called the Chameleon. Could you not have just called it Chameleon? But anyway, Chloe is looking up her Meteor Freaks database. We'll take a screenshot of that. And it's the same basic thing we've seen over the seasons, the one that Van McNulty found back in Extinction and printed out on his wall and all that's the same database. And they make it a point to say, oh, I don't have any record of anyone with invisibility in my records. I'm like, no, have you not watched the show? Like, this is Shimmer, season one, the guy was invisible. You know, I would have liked either don't mention the fact that you've never seen this before, or mention the fact that, oh, yeah, well, there was Jeff back in Smallville, but he used a potion and blah, blah. You know, like, that would have been two bits of dialogue I would have really appreciated. I've given season five a lot of credit for continuity, but also when they drop the ball, I'm bringing it up. And I wouldn't be so hard on it if they didn't go out of the way to say, nope, never seen this before, when clearly they have.
One line would have raised the bar greatly. Most people wouldn't notice. Even if they had been watching the show all along, I don't think it mattered. But for the hardcore fans who are really paying attention, it just adds that little extra bit of, we care. We watch our own show.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of it goes by in a matter of seconds, but there's some cool Easter eggs in her database. You see names of other Meteor Freaks in the past. So we'll take a screenshot of that. But anyway, that really stuck out to me for them to go out of the way to say, never seen this before. This is new. And then they start talking about the Meteorox. I'm like, no, why are you doing this?
It was so on the nose. He's like a fly on the wall. He can, meanwhile, invisible vision. You can almost hear the fly buzzing.
Clark's like, how would he know about the Meteorox? It's like, come on, God. And then again, the dude cannot stay invisible. So he's obviously had either followed Clark, he followed Clark there most likely, and he's standing there right next to them listening to this conversation. And then, they leave, and then we see, Graham standing there in the bullpen. I'm like, bro, stay invisible. Like, again, I know it's for the audience. But we saw the invisible vision. So it's like, anyway, I have problems with the way that they use this invisibility on this episode, in case you guys haven't noticed. So. But yeah, so somebody has to find out Clark's secret, his weakness, more importantly. So we have that box checked. And speaking of checking boxes, we have a +1 for shower scene, because we got Lois in her Jessica Rabbit silhouette taking a shower.
Again, you could do a shower scene without the backlit silhouette. I mean, on one level, I'm not complaining, but when you could be doing something so much better with Lois or any female character, it's just, I mean, I'm sure younger me would have been all, but more progressive older me has some problems with this.
No, I mean, I'm not outright complaining per se, as if acknowledging that it is gratuitous and unnecessary. So,
yes.
Especially when, again, there she's in this episode, we have her taking a shower, we have her working out in these, very revealing workout clothes. She's dating the villain of the week. She's playing video games and acting silly. It's like, this is as Matt Latham called a couple episodes ago, this is Zach Lois, the one I complain about. This is her in this episode.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I grant that. I'll Graham that.
Yeah, Graham that. Great Gabriel, everyone. So This is a classic, you know, Invisible Man kind of scene. It's actually, there's a scene just like this in the new Invisible Man movie. You know, female characters taking a shower, and then like you see hints of something. Like here, we see the Invisible Man POV vision. Like that is cheaper to do than have like a CGI steam outline of someone, which I was kind of expecting. Like, is she going to see him through the steam or through the, you know, the, like a Freddy Krueger thing through the wall, like his face through the shower curtain? That would have been cool. But it's easier just to throw a filter on it in After Effects and call it a day. So that's what they did with the POV vision. But she's having the classic, I'll go, someone's watching me. So she turns off the shower. She gets out of the shower. She grabs a brush to defend herself, which is amusing. Then goes up to the door, opens it, and it's Clark. And guess what? Lois doesn't have a towel. She's naked. They have this look that's exchanged. They're both in shock because it's each other. You know what, Tom? It's really funny that he saw her naked because they don't like each other.
Why is it funny? Oh yeah.
But they're gonna be married one day. And that's why this is such a comical
situation.
They're
gonna be together.
Tom. I just wanted to make sure that you.
Yes. Well. And Lois had seen Clark completely naked.
That's true.
So it was about time there was, turnabout's fair play.
There we go. Now, I will say probably my favorite line of the episode. I know I like a lot of Graham's lines here, but my favorite line of the episode is they go in here and Clark's like, Lois, I've been calling. I've been knocking. How long have you been in there? And she says, about an hour and a half. Now, that's funny. That is hilarious.
Well, except that's my wife.
No, it's very accurate. Women getting ready for a night out, that's 100. That's why it's funny, because it's accurate.
If I want a hot shower, we have a big hot water heater, but if I want a hot shower, I have to get in there first, because
they run out,
an hour and a half is nothing.
So that is the most true-to-life statement in this episode, and it was hilarious. Oh, I love that. So Clark, he tells her about Graham, and she's like, come on, Smallville, why are you so obsessed with my love life? And then he uses his super hearing, right? Which I thought was cool, but I didn't know how he was. He seemed to be following him with the super hearing, which is, hey, if you're in a room with like three people, I get how you can use your super hearing. But then he like follows him out to the Talon, and I thought he was going to use his X-ray vision. That's what I would have used.
Well, that's what he used before. If Chloe had remembered that they dealt with invisible people before, he could have pulled out all his invisible people tricks.
He's on the staircase now in the towel, and he sees like, you know, somebody, some waitress drop her tray and get pushed away. And we're like, oh, he must be running out the back door. So then we go into the behind the towel, which I refer to as Smallville's crime alley, because nothing good happens back there. Graham tells Clark, you should have taken the plasma, which is funny. And then he proceeds to pull out some kryptonite, beat up Clark, and then, as we find out, buries him. Not before telling him, look, man, you messed up. Now I got to kill you, and I got to kill Lex, and I got to kill Lana, right? And that's what Clark needs to know to end up where he's at for the climax of the episode. But yeah, this is the only reason he found out about the kryptonite was to knock out Clark, which is to let him get to where he needed to get in order to settle the climax. So I thought that was, you know, kind of contrived.
Yeah, typical Smallville. But I question this hitman's credentials. He weakens him. He has the opportunity to kill him. Presumably he has his strangle rope with him. But all he does is bury him in a couple inches of loose dirt.
You leave his cell phone conveniently placed outside of the dirt.
Worst hitman ever.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, what did he do before this? Right? Because he mentions to Clark here. He's like, yeah, I was driving through town. The best day of my life. Luckiest day of my life. You know, getting that power. Right? The meteors make you weak, but they gave me my new lifestyle, and I love it. I'm like, bro, what did you do before? Like, how did you just fall into being a hitman? It's like, did he have this? It would have made more sense, like we were saying earlier, like if he had had a lifestyle and his power adapted around that. But there's really no indication of he was just a normal guy and then he became invisible. And then I guess he looked up the mob or something and say, hey, I can be hitman for you. I don't know. So,
yeah, if it had been one of the first four seasons, there'd have been a kid in school who's constantly ignored or something, and it gets a power, and now he can make people ignore him. But you get none of that.
where are the themes of early Smallville, Tom? That's what I'm looking for. So,
yeah.
But we're back at the hospital, and Lex wakes up. Lana's there, and she tells him that the Clark stopped by. And he's like, "Did you tell him about us?" And this is when I was like, "Us? What are you talking about?"
Yeah, well, Lex comes across pretty well in this episode. I mean, this is almost good God Lex. Well, I mean, minus the talking to Milton Fine about evil stuff. Mm-hmm. But in terms of relationship, you know, you got that cute scene in the beginning. You've got Lex making great sense about Lana being open. He's putting on the charm. He's making nice. Now, or I guess the more cynical side of me is he wants to use Lana to make Clark hurt a little bit. But that didn't really come across in the scene.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, okay, is he doing this because he wants Lana to tell Clark because it digs at Clark? Or is he doing this because, at this point, there's still some good left in Lex that he respects the friendship he had with Clark? Like he said, Clark deserves the respect to have us tell him. Don't let him find out from someone else first, right? And I'm like, okay, I think Lex is really taking the high road here. I really do think he is respecting that friendship they had. So I agree. Lex, I was surprised at how well Lex came across in this episode because, you know, not four episodes ago, he hired someone to break up Clark and Lana. So we've come a long way since then. But things are going his way, so he's a little more lenient about it.
He's happy, Lex. He's
happy, Lex. See, if you just give Lex what he wants, he's a great guy. So.
Nobody's got to die as long as Lex is happy.
So then Chloe rushes into the Talon, and I didn't realize how much time had or hadn't passed at this point. Chloe rushes into Lois's apartment, and she's like, "Where's Clark? Where is he?" And she's like, "Well, he was just here warning me about Graham, and we didn't talk. Why is he so obsessed with my love life?" She's like, "Graham is a killer." She's like, "Oh, of course he is."
Wah, wah. Poor Lois.
So they start, you know, looking for Clark. Lois is like, "Well, they just ran out the back. He couldn't have gotten very far." And Chloe's like, "You'd be surprised." But they call Clark's cell phone, and thank God it wasn't buried. And thank God it wasn't on silent. Right, Tom?
Oh, yeah. You never know when somebody's going to need to find your body.
Yeah, I mean, my cell phone's usually on silent, but after watching this episode, I think I'm going to leave it off silent at this point. It's worth the social awkwardness of your phone going off when you shouldn't, in case one of my friends needs to find me buried alive. So
it's a safety thing.
It's be smart about it. Leave your phone off silent, okay? So anyway, they find Clark, and he's, you know, as we said, he's buried in like a foot of dirt in the back of the
maybe
salad there. I guess he figured that he had knocked Clark out and he would suffocate. But wouldn't your body, like, I don't know, I've never been buried alive, but wouldn't your self-preservation instincts, like, kick in and, like, you know, wake you up or something? Like, I know Clark has the kryptonite, but I don't know.
If he was in 6 feet of dirt, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was a foot of loose dirt. You're unconscious, but I kind of feel like, yeah, you'd roll over or
right.
Maybe move your head a little bit.
The real question is,
worst hitman ever.
The real question is, was he wearing the trench coat when he dug that dirt out of the way to put Clark in? Right. So anyway, Clark wakes up, and you know, Chloe throws the kryptonite away, which is, you know, the proximity-ness of the kryptonite is always what saves Clark. And then he's like, he's gonna kill Lex and Lana. So then we cut back to the hospital. Lex is on his laptop. He does not shut it, though, but he's talking to Fine. We'll take a screenshot of this. He's like, "Is the vaccine ready?" And Lex is like, "Yes." And you're like, "What is it?" We'll find out in the season finales. But my favorite part about this whole setup is Lex is sitting there, and he thinks someone's coming in. Like, he thinks it's like someone's coming to get him, and he has a gun under this towel next to his laptop. I love that.
He didn't bring clothes to the hospital because Lana gives him...
like a shirt.
non-hospital garb. But somehow he's got a silenced pistol in there.
Lex, you know, look, Lex has been in the hospital enough times to know bad things happen at Smallville Medical Center. Well, so.
And for the sake of the numbers, he does close the laptop when Lana walks in.
He does it. Oh, when she walks in, does he close it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, I missed absolutely that. Thank you, Tom. You're shut welcome that laptop plus one. That's right, because it's like it's a fake out at first. Right, that someone's there, and then it's there. Okay, good. I'll need to confer with my tally board to update that at the end. But good, we do have a shut that laptop. Very good. And another thing I noticed about this is I'm pretty sure we see Chloe's brain scans again from Tomb. That same thing of brain scans. I'm taking a screenshot of that too. I love these recurring props that just put in the background. It's just fun to see. But yeah, the door starts to open again, and when Lana's there talking to Lex, and he's like, "Get behind me!" He pulls out the gun. He just starts shooting. You know, all at the entrance. And you're like, "Did he get him? Did he not?" And then we see some blood, and we see that he did get Graham. He did shoot him, and supposedly, we're to assume a lethal area. Not sure where, but they start running away from him. Graham picks up the gun, and they're running away. And you know, again, Lex coming off very well. He gets between Lana and the shooter, so good on you, Lex. And Graham, you know, with his last breath, he's gonna shoot Lex. But Clark shows up just in the nick of time, super speeds in, knocks over Graham, catches the bullet. But Lana, none the wiser, is like, "Oh, Lex, you saved my life." and again, we get the shot of Lex and Lana in the foreground and Clark, you know, far away, like through a window or something. And again, the visual continuity, I do like, intentional or unintentional, but I do like it. And we see Clark and he's holding the bullet. It's like, no, he saved her life, but she'll never know. But the point is, Lex would have saved her life. Lex was willing to take a bullet for her. So Lex comes off very good in this episode. I agree with you, Tom.
He doesn't have superpowers. You know, if Graham got the shot off, Lex is taking another bullet. You know, he's got plenty of holes in him already. One more is not going to kill him, maybe. And his first instinct is to protect Lana. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets marks for me.
Yeah. I mean, look, Clark, you love Lana. Lex obviously loves Lana as well. He's going to take good care of her until her interests conflict with his self-interest until we get there. But it's for right now, you know, Lex is a
good... In the honeymoon period.
It's a safe place for her to be. It's with Lex. So.
I also wanted to point out, Rosenbaum does a nice little bit of acting in the room. When Graham's invisible, he's taken his 9 shots, because I counted them, because that's who I am. And they're just looking into the room, and presumably Graham punches them or hits him with the gun or whatever. But it's an invisible fist. But the sound effect, in addition to Rosenbaum's physical acting there, you really felt like he got hit. But when you think about it, there was nobody there. That was all him. And I love that sort of, you don't need invisible vision. You don't need any of the CGI special effects tricks to make an effective presentation of a superpower or, you know, interaction like that. Mm-hmm. It's such a little thing. I don't know why it made an impact on me, but it helped. It sold the scene.
Yeah, it sells it. Yeah, because when you're grappling with an invisible person, it can look ridiculous. You know, so the fact that it doesn't is a testament to the quality of what's going on. Then we get Martha and Lois. This is the bookend to that scene that got deleted, as we mentioned earlier. They're discussing Lois's love life, and also they're discussing that Lois made the deal with that other senator that she was working on doing her Pilates, so good on you, Lois. So she can multitask. Good for her. Lois is at least self-aware that all these guys that she ends up dating are like on, you know, America's Most Wanted you know, hit list, and Martha tells her, you know, when I was your age, you know, I wasn't dating Prince Charming's either. You know, I attracted the bad boy, and you know, until I met Jonathan, and Lois is worried that, you know, she's not going to see her Jonathan when he comes, because, you know, I don't know if you guys knew or not, but Clark and Lois end up together in the future, but she disregards Clark for years. So we get it, Cho. We understand.
Not in this lifetime.
You're not exactly right. So for all my harping on this, the whole episode, Martha, that scene does end when Martha's like, you'll know when it's the right one. And I said, I swear to God, if Clark walks in right now, I'm going to turn this episode off. But he did it. So thank you for your just 1% of restraint. Because the show is very guilty of that on many other occasions. Yeah. So anyway, I'm very glad that Clark did not walk in. But again, hey, it's good. Even though they're talking about their love lives and Clark and all that, it's good to see some scenes with Martha, and good to see some scenes with Martha and Lois, because Martha doesn't get enough scenes with anyone outside of her family on this show. So back at the Daily Planet, we got Chloe's first front page byline about the incident of this episode. We'll take a screenshot of that. So Clark is very happy to show that off to her. And they have a discussion about saving first and asking questions later. I like this discussion. You know, Clark's like, hey, if saving strangers is what happens when you do this, I don't know if I'm all about it. And Chloe's like, well, you can't, you don't know, right? You can't do that. You can't, like, not save people because you're afraid of something else that might happen. Which, again, is, you know, it's in the background of this entire series. But, hey, what if Clark had not saved Lex on the bridge that day, right? The world might have been a better place. Wouldn't have President Luther blown up the Earth later on Earth 167, before Crisis, I guess. But anyway. That's an important lesson for him to learn. Like, it's an understood thing in Superman, but I think this was, like, I'm glad they kind of brought it into the light, as they said, like, here's a microcosm of what we're doing there. Because you don't know, right? You don't know what people are going to do with their lives if they're given a second chance or whatever, right? The ripple effect of saving lives that would have ended without your interference, it's incalculable. You'll never know. So you always err on the side of doing the right thing and things work themselves out.
And I'm glad they call it out. This is why I watch Smallville. I hope this is okay, but I wasn't the greatest Superman fan.
Excuse me?
For a long time. Hello? Hello? Zach, are you still there? I mean, he was fine, but you always hear the complaint that he is too powerful. You know, godlike. There's no problem that he shouldn't be able to solve by virtue of his long list of abilities. But with Smallville, you had a chance to see kind of a real life. Not real life, because we don't have Superman in real life. But it's real issues. It's learning. He needs to learn these lessons. He didn't just grow up and all of a sudden he was Superman. There's a lot that went into it. Jonathan Kent's influence, Martha's influence, his friendships, his early adventures. The Smallville Superman, even though we didn't get spoilers to see the Superman payoff, is kind of the Superman that I always really wanted. Not the one that just pushes the easy button and super speed, heat vision, whatever. It's, oh, I got to grapple with, I got to crash on a girl, you know, or I see the girl I like kiss another guy.
Well, it's like the Spider-Man version of Superman, right? Because it's the Peter Parker, right? That's the, yes, the everyman, like, I got real problems, I'm trying to pay my rent, right? That kind of stuff, right? And Smallville mills that pretty well, I think. And it came out, you know, concurrently with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy, which I love. And I think, you know, those same themes are in both, yes, of those. So, absolutely. To your point there, as Jor-El tells him, the series finale, although he got his abilities from Jor-El, it is Jonathan and Martha Kitt and all the people in Smallville and his time there that made him who he is. So,
yep,
always hold on to Smallville. There it is. So, now, the conversation between Clark and Chloe here does shift to, you know, Clark is, you know, he's forgiven Chloe. He's like, I'm sorry I called you a bad friend. I understand, you know, about the Lex Luthor stuff. And he's like, just to see the person you love in the arms of someone else, you know, you have no idea how hard it was to see him like that. And Chloe's like, yep, I kind of do. Clark is so, he is so oblivious here to who he's talking to, right?
And how many episodes has it been since we got some Chloe torture porn?
Right. It's like, we haven't made Chloe feel bad. Yeah. She got her front page headline right there, but we got to bring her back down immediately.
Right back down to earth. Just poor Chloe. She gets treated so badly.
And again, I'm sure that Al and Miles had some girl, one of them had a girl named Chloe that broke their heart. I'm convinced of that, right? But
some payback.
This is very on brand for Clark to not even realize what he's saying to Chloe. Like, oh, can you imagine if you like somebody or loved them and saw them with somebody else? That's crazy. You could never imagine how I feel. I can't even breathe. And Chloe's like, yep, know how it feels. So anyway, hashtag I love Chloe. So final scene in the loft. Clark is taking down the telescope. Now, there's not a deleted scene of this on the DVDs or anything, but I remember back on Krypton's site back in the day, maybe it was the spoilers page, but there was supposed to be a scene in one of these episodes where he's mad about all this and he like breaks the telescope because the telescope kind of like represented his connection with Lana. And I thought that was a cool thing to have him like have a temper tantrum and break it. And he's packing it up here and when Lana comes up, she's like, "I thought you loved that thing." It's like, "It doesn't work anymore." And like, it's symbolism. Lana has the telescope.
Well, I'm glad you brought up remembering a deleted scene where he broke the telescope, because he tells her that he's taking it down because it's broken. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, this is the Lana scope.
Yeah.
You know, it's been broken ever since Lana moved away from next door.
Ah.
She moved to the Talon, and you know, there's been no use for this thing sitting there. But
hey, Clark likes astronomy,
to your
okay?
Point, sure he does. But to your point, it's representational.
Mm-hmm. Also, Smallville always won for subtlety. Now that Lana is with Lex, she dresses in all black.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, no, she comes to tell Clark she's like, "Well, one of the things that frustrated me about us was you weren't honest with me, and I'm not going to be that way. So Lex and I are seeing each other." Clark's like, "Look, Lana, I know you don't want to hear this, especially for me, but you can't trust Lex." And she's like, "And I can trust you?" And she's got a good point, right? I mean, Clark has no ground to stand on whatsoever with her at this point. So, hey, Clark, give the guy some credit. You know, I mean, he was going to take a bullet for her.
He would have taken a bullet if it wasn't for Clark. So, yeah.
There's just a lot of baggage for all these characters. So I even though we can all sit and make fun of the way they're going about this, like, you can understand it's awkward. There's no easy, clean way to go about any of this for these characters. So, yeah. So now Clark officially, now they know that Clark knows that they know and all that stuff about their relationship, and that is out in the open now. And that's what the whole season has been working toward: breaking up Clark and Lana, getting Lex and Lana together. She walks out and he like tries to stop her. She's like, "Clark, it's over. That was your decision." I was like, "Well, I don't think he's trying to get back with you. I think he's just trying to warn you about the last."
It's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." Hold on, Lana. Just
And again, I think they must have run out of music budget for this episode, because the episode just kind of ends with the Mark Snow music, which is fine. But, you know, Smallville staples, we're in the loft here. I need something. I need music for tonight's Smallville, brought to you by. That's what I'm looking for. And
could include a Coldplay track.
Yeah, so,
I mean, they mentioned the band in the episode, so
that's a great point, Tom. Maybe they thought, "Oh, cool, we'll get a Coldplay song at the end of this," and they're like, "They're too expensive."
Coldplay was
now.
Like, "Pass."
That's season two budget. All right, we ain't got that kind of budget anymore. We went on a location shoot. What do you want from us, right? So, anyway, and that's the episode. Lana leaves the loft once again. I've forgotten that she went back to the loft before, like, gosh, like Crimson in season six, right? Because obviously, you know, they're not even on real speaking or friends terms for a long time, and I thought after she walked out, you know, hypnotic, that was it. But yeah, here she is back again at the loft, and so we'll keep a loft watch on her to see when she shows back up. But I think this is her last time going up and down those stairs in a while. There you have it. That is the end of Fade Out. Look what I did there. See, because actually I think it cuts to black, but whatever.
Clark, when you and I were together, nothing bothered me more than when you were less than honest with me. I don't want to be like that.
It's a good choice.
At the hospital, when I told you I was at the mansion to return some books, I was lying. Lex and I have actually been spending a lot of time together.
You know, I kind of noticed.
Clark, it's more than that. We're seeing each other. And I thought that it would be best if you heard it from me first.
Lana, I know you don't want to hear this. Especially from me. You can't trust Lex.
And I could trust you?
I just don't want to see you get hurt.
I know you think you're being some kind of a hero, Clark. But the truth is, I don't need you to protect me.
Fate got a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5. So, Tom, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Fade?
C plus. As has been pointed out by others on the show, C is average. So I don't, while some people might think that's harsh, I think it's on the upper end of average.
Astri, I'm getting with a B minus, which might sound surprising because I probably have sounded like I was just ripping this apart. But no, I think the idea of, hey, what are the repercussions of you saving someone? That's a really good idea. They do address it head on a couple times in the episode. There's some good saves here, like at the beginning with Clark saving Graham from the car on the location. That's always good to see. As twisted as it is at this point, out of context, the Lex and Lana stuff is very nice, as we discussed. And Graham, he was more than just a one-dimensional, like, from high school to evil character, as the term has been coined here on the show. So although he was kind of he's a one-episode character, he had some charm to him and was at least love to hate that kind of guy, right? So despite Absolutely. All my lowest criticisms of this episode, B minus for me, C plus for you. Let's go to the tally board. We have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket. That brings us to 37. We have a plus one for hospital visit. That brings us to 85. We have a plus one for shower count. Brings us to 21. And we have a plus one for shut that laptop. Thanks for catching that, Tom, because I missed it. That brings us to 19. Shut that laptops. So, and finally, Bechdel test. You know, we have a lot of female characters talking to each other, but it's always about this guy or that relationship or this going on. So unfortunately, that is a fail. All right, Tom. Well, thanks for coming out from behind the artist easel there and getting behind the microphone. Good to have you on the show. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
I am at Tom Gehrke, TomGehrke. Just like it sounds.
How do people pronounce it? You say they pronounce it wrong. What do they say?
Tom Jerky, which is probably true on occasion. It's really harsh around Thanksgiving with Tom Turkey, which rhymes. So I have some bad childhood memories of that. But yeah, Tom Gehrke, if you can spell it, that's where I am everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, or just follow Zach, and I'm sure you'll see me pop in his stream.
Yeah, and you can see Tom's art with every episode of Always Holding the Smallville. You can see me on the podcast proper with the blue shirt and the red jacket, or on the Patreon with the red shirt and the blue jacket. So pulling a Smallville Complete Series DVD look with that. So I will never understand why... they put Clark in that outfit on the Complete Series DVD.
The Bizarro outfit.
And also, Tom puts together our Wall of Weird for our Patreon every month. So thanks again, Tom. As for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movie franchises, prequels, sequels, remakes, reboots, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. As for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville, and you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next time talking about Oracle. Know that Oracle. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Casey Cochran, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sacchi, Rachel Miller, Catherine Emmerich, Andrew Parker, James Lee, James Bandini II, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Will Hunt, Nathan Rotacher, Clunk Kent, Tom Gehrke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, Anthony Anderson,
Joey Dimeberg, and Fres Horshey. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.